Ivan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. 1 minute now before 11 o'clock. This program has been made possible in part by KBOO members and support from Artemis Foods, Portland's local organic and sustainable catering company since 2000. Special events, corporate and wedding catering with seasonal menus, and service supported by sustainable business operations. Artemis offers full service and drop-off catering. Info at artemisfoods.com. Coming up in a half hour, we've got the film show today, taking you on a tour of classic drive-in theaters around Oregon, where you can bring your roadster, your bike, or even your two legs to a screening under the stars. But up next, stick around for Between the Covers. David Naiman will be speaking to Mary Ruffel right after this.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Good morning and welcome to Between the Covers. I'm David Naiman, your host. Today's guest is poet, essayist, and erasure artist Mary Ruffel. Mary Ruffel is the author of 10 books of poetry, most recently Trances of the Blast from Wave Books and her selected poems, which was the winner of the William Carlos Williams Award from the Poetry Society of America. She's also the author of a book of prose entitled The Most of It, the comic book Go Home and Go to Bed, and her much-beloved collection of lectures, Madness, Rack, and Honey, a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award in Criticism. Mary Ruffel is also the creator of nearly 100 one-of-a-kind erasures of 19th-century texts, some of which have been exhibited in museums and galleries, and two that have been reproduced and published as A Little White Shadow from Wave Books and Incarnation of the Now from C. Double Press. Ruffel is the recipient of many honors, including a Guggenheim Fellowship, a National Endowment of the Arts Fellowship, the Robert Creeley Award, an award in literature from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, and a Whiting Award, and she teaches in the MFA program of Vermont College. Mary Ruffel returns to Between the Covers to talk about her two latest books, two books of prose, both out in the last year, My Private Property from Wave, and On Imagination from Saraban Books' Quarternote Chapbook Series. The Boston Review says of Mary Ruffel, as a verbal hunter-gatherer, Ruffel is a barometer of our lyric listening. Her poems are sieves of consciousness, catching strangeness and mundanity, the overheard and the under the breath. Ruffel reminds us how odd, synthetic, and arduous it is, the pursuit of this transmission of verbal fact and form. If you want to know how an early 21st century lyric poem gets made and how it is tethered to the rhetorics and resources of its time and place, start here. LitHub says that Mary Ruffel is the best prose writing poet in America today. And Essay Daily adds, I might say us dreamers have gotten a hold of the essay form. I might speak about how Mary Ruffel's prose explores the varied experience of singular feeling, feelings within feelings, braiding feelings, feelings slipping into other feelings, feelings inflecting feeling, feeling chasing feeling. I might talk about how Mary Ruffel's prose makes you laugh aloud and in the same breath breaks your heart. Welcome to Between the Covers, Mary Ruffel.
Thank you, David. I'm happy to be here in grumpy Portland.
That's right.
We can put a smile on Portland's face today.
I hope so, too.
Gee, that stuff that you just read, other people talking about my work, I'm unfamiliar with all of that. And
I didn't make it up.
It is so weird. Oh, that's funny. But it's so strange to hear that stuff, because when I hear it, it's like they're talking about someone else, not me, you know? So that was a strange place to begin. Wow.
Well, let's stay in the strange for a minute.
Yeah.
So I know that you're not particularly interested in how your work is classified. That's not something that is of particular concern to you. And nevertheless, my private property is harder to classify, or people are having a harder time classifying it than your poetry collections. People have called it short essays, brief lectures, paragraph poems, flash fiction, biographical nonfiction, lyric essay, philosophy, memoir. But the reason I bring it up is around this issue of compartmentalization and the desire to classify in relationship to this book, because one of the themes that it seems like you explore in My Private Property is that of growing older. And in your description of growing older, you portray life as becoming less compartmentalized. And I was wondering if you could talk a little...
Oh, that is true. That is true.
Yeah.
I feel that in my own life. I'm not sure I feel that in my writing, but then again, you just made a connection that I've never seen before, because I don't think about my writing. I just write it.
Yeah.
But that is true. Okay. When I look at this book, My Private Property, I see that everything has a right flush margin, so... To my mind, which is very, I have a very simple mind, it's all prose. That's what it's doing together, because it's not lineated. But within that, I see prose poems. The color pieces are clearly prose poems. I see essays. Pause is an essay. And the longest piece in the book, the title piece, My Private Property, is obviously an essay. You know, they're nonfiction essays. And then you have pieces that are like short stories, and my example would be The Gift, very clearly a kind of a story. I'm trying to think, and another example of a story might be The Woman Who Couldn't Describe a Thing If She Could. It might be Observations on the Ground would be an essay. But I can go through and I can say, to me, I don't care, you know, essay, story, prose poem, essay, story, prose poem.
But
so
if
I see those three things.
But if we were to step back from the book and look more at you exploring growing older and the disappearance of compartments as an experience and the sense of life being more unified.
Can
you speak a little bit to that phenomenon?
When I was young... and younger, I had what I would call a compartmentalized life. I had a job, work, whatever job I happened to have at that time. I had school, if I was in school or if I was I don't know. I had my inner life as a writer. Then I had my life with my family, playing the role of daughter. You know, there was family. Then I had intimate relationships with others. So there was the relationship world, and there was the family world, and there was the work world, and the school world, and the inner world, and the world of writing. And then there's also the public world of writing. You know, poets call it PoBiz. You know, and then there's that. And they were all rather compartmentalized. And I think for me as an artist, my life has... not consciously, but nonetheless evolved towards, thankfully, a unification of all these different compartments, so that now it all seems rather seamless and everything feeds everything else, and it's osmosis to go from one to the other. I'm not stepping out of one and into another. I'm just kind of swimming between... different temperatures of water in the same lake body. And I love that, and I hope that all artists reach that point It's sometimes difficult to maintain, but it's very hard to reach that when you're young. First of all, even if you have your own family and your parents are still living, it's like two families, you know. And there's great freedom in the death of your biological family. Oh, this, I know how grim this sounds, but I'm just putting a different spin on it. And you also learn intimate relationships that, you know, I'm a teacher. I read the poems of 20 and 30-year-olds. It consumes them. They are consumed by that search for happiness. And it takes years to understand that that comes and goes and you're never going to find what you're looking for and it's not going to turn out to be what you think it will be or expect it to be. Anyone past a certain age knows that, but it's something that has to be lived. You can't look at a 20-year-old and tell them you really should be out there looking at birds and stones and rocks and writing about other things. You can't do that. Because I, too, was consumed when I was 20 with that.
Right.
I didn't have the life experience to shove me in the right direction. And so, So I agree with you, yeah.
Well, let me ask a question around that, because this mm-hmm. sense of unification, mm-hmm. and then also I would say, there's a sense of wonder and play that often gets evoked mm-hmm. in your writing mm-hmm. that I think a lot of people might attribute to childhood, like the sense mm-hmm. of play, the sense of unification, the sense of being in the present moment. Mm-hmm. But I feel like what you're describing is something really different. It doesn't feel to me like it's a return to like a childhood experience, but what do you think about
no,
that?
No, but a very young child, until you get to school, your life is not compartmentalized. It really isn't. It's not. But as soon as you go to school, you then have your school life and your home life, because your parents are not there with you in kindergarten or first grade. Mm. And you suddenly, your interaction with your peers and your teachers, already, there's the beginning of two worlds. So I would say up until first grade, a child has a seamless unity
yeah.
of existence. And I am... It's obviously, it's different for me now, but I try to maintain, that's the wrong word. I don't try to maintain. I'm basically, you know, there is a 7-year-old girl inside of me, and wonderful things can come of that, and also extremely immature, negative things. Mm. But I love to play. I know how to play. I still play. It's not something I gave up. There's a wonderful anecdote. I think I tell this anecdote in On Imagination, where there's a little girl whose daddy teaches art or painting at a college, and she says, "What do you do all day?" And he thinks about it, and he says, "I teach people how to draw." And she says, "People forget how to draw?"
Right.
You know? And lately I actually heard another story where a little girl had a father who was a therapist, a psychotherapist, and said, "What is it you do all day?" And he thought about the best way to tell this to a child, and he said, "I teach people how to wonder." And her response could well be, "People forget how to wonder," you know?
Right.
So,
those are
yeah.
great. In case you just tuned in, we're talking today to writer and poet Mary Ruffel about her latest two books of prose, My Private Property from Wave and On Imagination from Saraband.
Yeah.
Well, there was another piece in On Imagination and My Private mm-hmm. Property that remind me of this dynamic. One is the line in My Private Property, "In the beginning, you understand the world, but not yourself. And when you finally understand yourself, you no longer understand the world."
Yeah, that's in the opening piece, A Little Golf Pencil.
Yeah. And then in On Imagination, there's sort of maybe a kindred sentiment. You talk about when you were younger that you were interested in many of the same things as your students.
Mm-hmm.
But as you aged, you now aren't interested in most of the things they are.
Oh, that's a problem for every aging teacher.
But you actually had a friend point out something that was maybe complicating this, which I thought was really fascinating. She said that other people have never been interested in the things that interest you. Mm-hmm. But when you were younger, you didn't understand that they weren't interested in the same things. But as you got older, you didn't become more isolated. You just became wiser about the isolation you always had.
That is a true remark by a very dear old friend of mine. And it struck me when she said those words to me, because I immediately intuited how true they were. I'll just speak about poetry in ways that poets aren't supposed to talk about it. But the truth of the matter is, when I was young, it never occurred to me that the world was not interested in poetry. I mean, I just thought it was the most important thing in the world, which is a good way to get into it and a good way to be in it for a while. But the older I get, the more I am aware of it as nobody reads poetry. And you can point to the academic programs, you can point to summer conferences, you can point to readings, you can point to publications and presses, and I get that. But that is a self-created and sustaining audience. Nobody actually reads poetry in this country. I'm speaking about the United States of America in 2017. And the more that dawns on you, I can't believe I'm admitting this, but there are mornings when I say to myself, what was I thinking? Why didn't someone sit down, look me in the eye when I was 22-year-old and say, you're out of your mind. Whatever you do, don't become a poet. My father tried to tell me that, but I was never going to listen to him. And now I feel I should have listened to all these people. And now first of all, everything I'm saying, you have to understand when I say I don't mean me. So I cover myself that way. So I do have these days, and I am writing more and more prose, and my prose, more and more people read the prose. More people read the prose than the poetry. And I would say to myself, I don't set out to write poems anymore. But they come on their own, uninvited. Mm. And I'm always saying, go away, go away. But it's a natural part of my being, and I can't stop it.
Yeah.
They're there with me my poems are there with me whether or not I want them to be, whether or not I'd rather be doing something else. They're there, and I let them be, and I welcome them in. But everyone is uninvited. Everyone is uninvited. The prose pieces I kind of try to invite, but the poems come uninvited, but I can't stop it. Oh, well, that's a lot of nonsense, but
you mentioned how you feel like more people are reading your prose. And before we started recording, mm-hmm. we were talking about pause. Mm-hmm. So maybe this would mm-hmm. be a great time to read it, because you talked about how unanticipated of a large response that you received.
That's true. I was getting this. Letters from women. I'm going to find it here. Bear with me, Portland. I'm flipping pages of a book. Here it is. So this is an essay, and it's called Pause. And before the essay begins, reprinted in the book, in facsimile, is a page from a notebook that I kept. And it's a cryologue. And a cryologue, I think I made that word up. I don't think you'd find it in the dictionary. But a cryologue is just a log of entries of how many times I cried in April of a specific year. I know specifically the year, April 1998. And on the left-hand margin, it's, you know, M for Monday, 2 for Tuesday, W for Wednesday, and so on through Sunday. And then it starts over again, and it keeps going. And for some reason, even though it's April's cryologue, there's 58 entries. And then next to the day, it's C for cry times 3. No, NC, no cry. C times 3, C times 3, C times 1, C times 2, C times 2, C times, and it goes on and on like that. I think the highest number is 4, crying 4 times. So this cryologue precedes the piece I will now read to you. Pause. I recently came across an old cryologue that I had kept during the month of April in 1998. C stands for the fact I cried. The number of C's represents the number of times I cried, and NC indicates that I did not cry on that day. The saddest thing is I now find the cryologue very funny and laugh when I look at it. But when I kept it, I wanted to die, literally to kill myself, with an iron, a steaming, hot, turned-on iron. This was not depression. This was menopause. Reading this or any other thing ever written about menopause will not help you in any way, for how you respond to menopause is not up to you. It is up to your body. And though you believe now that you can control your body, such as your strength after all that yoga, you cannot. Of course, you may be lucky. I know a woman who experienced menopause in no way whatsoever except that one day she realized it had been a couple of years since her last period, which was indeed her last. You hear a lot about hot flashes, but hot flashes are the least of it, totally inconsequential in every way. You get as hot as a steam iron at odd moments, so what? The media would have you believe that hot flashes are the single most significant symptom toward which you should direct your attention and their products. But when I think of menopause, I don't think of hot flashes. I am not here to talk about hot flashes. Except to tell you that they do not cease even after you have completely gone through menopause. They become a part of your life the way your periods were. They are periodic, and after a while you stop talking about them. No, I am here to tell you that one woman, a woman who is the most undepressed, optimistic, upbeat person I know, awoke one morning and walked straight into her kitchen and grabbed a butcher's knife, she is a world-class cook, with the intent of driving it through her heart. That was menopause. If you take the time to peruse the annals of any 19th century asylum, as I have, you will discover that the cause of admittance for all women over 40 is listed as cessation of menses. Sometimes I saw the words change of life, which sounds like a euphemism, but isn't. In other words, you go crazy. When you go crazy, you don't have the slightest inclination to read anything Foucault ever wrote about culture and madness. It may be that you recall your 13th year on Earth. Menopause is adolescence all over again, only you are an adult and have to go out into the world every day in ways you did not have to when you were in school, where you were surrounded by other adolescents, safe or relatively so, in the asylum of junior high. You are a 13-year-old with the experience and daily life of a 45-year-old. You have on some days the desire to fuck a tree or a dog, whichever is closest. You have the desire to leave your husband or lover or partner, whatever. No matter how stable or loving the arrangement, you want out. You may decide to take up an insane and hopeless cause. You may decide to walk to Canada, or that it is high time you begin to collect old blue china, 3,000 pieces of which will leave you bankrupt. Suddenly, the solution to all problems lies in selling your grandmother's gold watch, or drinking your body weight in cider vinegar. A kind of wild forest blood runs in your veins. This and other behaviors will horrify you. You will seek medical help because you are intelligent, and none of the help will help. You will feel as if your life is over, and you will be absolutely right about that. It is over. No matter how attractive or unattractive you are, you have been used to having others look you over when you stood at the bus stop or at the chemist's to buy tampons. They have looked you over to assess how attractive or unattractive you are, so no matter what the case, you were looked at. Those days are over. Now others look straight through you. You are completely invisible to them. You have become a ghost. You no longer exist. Because you no longer exist, you will do anything for attention. You may shave your head or dye your hair or wear striped stockings or scream at complete strangers. You've seen them, haven't you? The middle-aged women screaming at the attendant in the convenience store. You are a depressed adolescent who sweats through her clothing and says terrible things to everyone, especially the people she loves. You begin to lie. You have the urge to shoplift. And if you drive an automobile, you have the urge to ram your car into the car in front of you. Nothing can prepare you for this. The one thing no one will tell you is that these feelings and this behavior will last 10 years. That is, a decade of your life. Ask your doctor if this is true, and she will deny it. Then comes a day when you see a woman, that's in quotes, who is buying tampons, and you think of her as a girl. And she is. Anyone who has periods is a girl. You know this is true, and it is very funny to you. You are a woman. The 10 years have passed. You love your children. You love your lover. But there are no longer any persons on earth who can stop you from being yourself. You have put your parents in the earth. You have buried the past. Of course, in the meantime, you have destroyed your life, and it has to be completely remade, and there is a great deal of grief and regret and nostalgia and all of that. But even so, you are free. Free to sit on the bank and throw stones and feel thankful for the few years or one or two decades left to you in which you can be yourself. Even if a great many other women ended their lives, even if the reason they ended their lives is reported as having been for reasons having nothing to do with menopause, which is thankfully behind you, as you would never want to be a girl again for any reason at all, you have discovered that being invisible is the biggest secret on earth, the most wondrous gift anyone could ever have given you. If you are young and you are reading this or hearing this, perhaps you will understand the gleam in the eye of any woman who is 60, 70, 80, or 90. She cannot take you seriously, sorry, for you are but a girl to her, despite your babies and shoes and lovemaking and all of that. You are just a girl playing at life. You are just a girl at the edge of a great forest. You should be frightened, but instead you are eating a lovely meal, or you are cooking one, or you are running to the florist, or you are opening a box of flowers that has just arrived at your door. And none of these things is done in the great spirit that they will later be done in. You haven't even begun. You must pause first, the way one must always pause before a great spirit, if only to take a good breath. Happy old age is coming on bare feet, bringing with it grace and gentle words and ways that grim youth has never known.
We've been listening to Mary Ruffel read her piece, Pause, from her latest book, My Private Property, from Wave Books.
I think there's a typo in that. Sorry. I think that on that last penultimate paragraph, you must pause first, the way one must always pause before a great, I think it should be endeavor or task.
And what does it say?
The word, it says spirit. You must pause first, the way one must always pause before a great spirit. I mean, it kind of works, but I don't think I wrote that. It's funny.
Wow.
I just noticed it. That's all. It's no big deal.
That's fascinating.
That's okay. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, folks.
But we'll probably get that part.
The minutia of being a writer, you know, every little word you get all upset about. Yeah, and you know, now that I've read that, this was written, 10 years ago or something. Okay, now that I've read that, when I read it now, when I'm reading it, the bit, all the stuff about invisibility, I don't think of a woman going in the middle of menopause. I now think of the elderly and the aged, because I'm at this cusp. I'm 65. I'm at this cusp where when I see someone who's 85, I do still, there's a bit of invisibility that they have for me. Hmm. You know? It's like no one is invisible up to about 75. But over 75, and I see now, and I'm well aware of this, the invisibility of the elderly, which I'm very much facing and aware of, and it gets transforms. That's what I was thinking while I was reading it, the bit about invisibility.
Yeah, so it shifted.
It shifted from the invisibility of a middle-aged woman to the invisibility of the elderly,
yeah,
who our entire society treats them. You know, and they're the fastest growing segment that we have. You know, see how I just referred to them? They.
Right.
I mean, that's very hypocritical of me, given that I wrote this. So that's what's on my mind now, is the end game.
If you've been enjoying today's conversation with Mary Ruffel, we are actually just warming up. We have another 30 to 40 minutes of conversation after this. And if you'd like to hear it, we're going to have it on the website later today at kboo.fm/betweenthecovers. We've been listening to Mary Ruffel. I'm David Naiman, your host, and this is Between the Covers.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Willamette River Festival and Movie in the Park, Sunday, July 30th from 1 to 10 p.m. at the Cathedral Park waterfront in Portland. The Willamette River Festival is a celebration on the waterfront with live music by Shanghaied on the Willamette, Norman Sylvester, and more, as well as a beer garden, food carts, an environmental fair, DJ Anjali and the Incredible Kid.